This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again, and welcome to the Referee's World podcast. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. This is my mentor and Somerset County FA County Training Officer. Right, I'll start again.
Hello. My name's Darren Cullum. This is Referees World Podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah, that's it. Brilliant. Welcome to the Referees World Podcast. If you're a new listener and you're thinking, what are these two jokers on about? No, sometimes it goes slightly wrong and I've just made a decision there and then. Let's not edit it out. Let's keep it in. It makes it really human, doesn't it?
There we go.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Referees World. I'm a level 5. Rich is the County Training Officer for Somerset FA. He's also my mentor and a PGMO assessor. In this episode, before we go any further, Happy New Year, Rich. Let's get the pleasantries out of the way.
Happy New Year, Darren. Happy New Year to all.
And let's not make any reference to size, weight, or anything of the like.
I would just like to say, after the Christmas and New Year, I'm rather chunky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need to get back on the bike.
You do.
Yeah.
Me too, because I've been out of action on the field of play for quite a while now, so I'm conscious of that. And I may be a little rusty on certain areas, which will probably become apparent through the course of the show.
Oh, by all means, bounce them at me.
So I'm up for a bit of bouncage tonight. Also, we did send a tweet out before we went live to be interactive as much as we possibly could, just to say that we're recording the podcast at the moment. And if there's anything that may arise or anything that comes up that you want us to talk about, then we'll do it as it happens, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm quite up for that kind of thing. But on the show, on the episode this time around, I've got a few things we want to talk about. A great match incident, which I'm looking forward to getting on the phone.
Yeah, a good match incident. It involved a conversation I had last night at local referees association meeting. And it was a match incident from David Jackson, a level 5 referee. He had mass confrontation, dismissals and all sorts of things happening. So we're going to phone up David in a short while and have a chat with him and talk through it and put it on the podcast. There'll be no name of clubs or players involved for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But we just want to share the match incident, which is what I think is part of our podcast idea, to share experiences.
I think it's a really tasty one as well.
It is very.
And
very
a lot of good common sense was used.
Yeah. Yeah, some good reference.
And all that sort of stuff comes down to experience, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Some of the newer colleagues would really learn from something like
absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, some of the things that David did, they're not according to the book, but they're very good management skills. Mm-hmm. So we'll cover that when we get to him.
That's a good tease. It's a good way to keep people listening on, isn't it? Absolutely.
To.
Yeah, brilliantly. Yeah. We're going to do the training topics. Basically, Rich has got a series of training cards and he shuffles them out like a pack of cards. I'll choose one at random and then we'll discuss that particular training topic.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to have a discussion about the Referees Association. I want to be careful by not leading people falsely about it, but I want listeners to think about the benefits of the Referees Association and what purpose it will serve for them. I'm going to pose some questions. We'll have a little debate, but I also want to pose the questions and leave it open for responses via the Twitter website or our own website, refereesworld.co.uk.
And of course, if you are listening for the first time, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Referees World. We've got a Facebook page as well, Referees World Podcast. You can listen online through the website, as Richard said, refereesworld.co.uk, or on iTunes, so you can listen on your iPhone, your iPad, your iTV, your iThis, your iThat. Just search for Referees World on iTunes, and then when we do a new episode, it will automatically download for you. Or you can go back and listen to previous episodes as well, because we're there, we're online now, we're on the World Wide Web, and we're listened to all over the world. So let's crack on with it then. Let's first of all start with this. Nice, interesting piece. UEFA chief Michel Platini wants yellow cards to be replaced by a rugby-style system of sin bins. That's an interesting one.
Start the debate. Where to start it? Right, to replace the yellow cards, is that what the quote said?
It says here, replaced by sin bins.
Personally,
yeah.
I don't think it should replace the yellow card. Or the caution, as it's technically called. The cautions are there for a reason. It's there to deter players from doing the ultimate and being sent off. So, the sin bin, what's the purpose of the sin bin? What's it there to do? Is it there to take the steam out of the game? Yeah, arguably that's what it will do. But there, when you look at the professional game, there are teams that arguably play a little bit better defensively as regards down to 10 men or even less if that happens. So arguably, using a sin bin for a period, let's say 10 minutes, is that what we're going to sort of suggest through conversation? And will you penalise someone and put them in the sin bin for 10 minutes for a technical offence or a penal foul offence, infringement, whatever you wish to call it? So what sort of offence will be sort of expected as regards you will spend 10 minutes in the sin bin? Let's follow rugby's idea. I don't understand the rugby laws completely, so I need to be careful here rather than misquote, but I understand why a referee will allow someone, I think I understand, why he'll allow someone to punch someone, but for a technical offence, he'll send him off. Now, I don't really understand why, so I wouldn't want to follow this anywhere near a rugby situation, because we have our rules as regards anybody that's guilty of violent conduct will be dismissed. That's period, isn't it? Yeah.
Things like dissent, okay? Now, I'm talking here kicking the ball away in frustration.
Okay.
That would be, for me, a sin bin offence.
Right.
Dissent whereby it's verbal.
Okay, let's
potentially
go one stage
could be
at
a sin
time
bin.
Then, because you've really touched on something that's very, very good subject to discuss. You've talked about kicking the ball away as dissent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, arguably, you could use that as delaying the restart. So that's one of two cautionable offences. Have we got too many cautionable offences in the game?
I think so. I think there's, yeah, I think one of the things that comes up in all these kind of conversations is which side of the law is it? Should it be black or white? And you hear this on radio commentary as well. When the commentators are doing this, all right, the chances are they don't always know the law as well as the referees probably do. They're pretty good at it, but sometimes they are speaking on behalf of the member of the public watching that game.
Yeah.
It should, in some cases, be made black or white. Offside is a really good example of that.
Well, be careful about going into offside situations.
Yeah, I know.
That's a real can of worms.
Yeah, well, exactly. If it's a can of worms, then perhaps there should be things made should be more clearer, as opposed to going more technical with this.
Okay, let's deal with the technical offences. For dissent...
Give an example for the colleagues that perhaps don't know what you're talking about where technical is concerned.
A technical is dissent.
Yeah.
He's clearly conceded a foul of pushing. Let's use that one, of pushing or holding. And you've penalised it. And he's in the zone. He's in the heat at the moment. And he just makes a comment to you and says, you're having a laugh.
Mm.
You know, and it's quite aggressive. It's not a soft approach he's having towards you, and he clearly is heard by many other people. And arguably, he's even picked the ball up and thrown it to the ground. So, you know, there's technical offences. It's not an offence against somebody else on this occasion, but you've decided that you're going to apply a caution. But if we go towards this blue card, sin bin, is it a blue card we're introducing as well? Because I hear people talking about that. So if we're going to put a player in for 10 minutes in the sin bin...
So what comes after the sin bin? A sending off then? Or is it...
I think the caution should stay in.
So what you're saying is sin bin, i.e. blue card, then a caution, and then a red card. So the same player can make three...
Hang on a minute. So he gets three strikes before he gets sent off.
No, it'd be two strikes, wouldn't it?
So,
two strikes.
Yeah. Third strike, he's off.
See, I've always been told, no, you've always told me that.
Yeah, I believe in being firm in control.
I quite like
being assertive.
I quite like the idea of the sin bin replacing the yellow card to a certain degree, and then after the sin bin, bang, you're off.
Let me provoke you here.
This is a big old can of worms.
This is a huge one. We all have a different tolerance level as regards what we will accept as regards dissent from a player. Now, let me say to you,
I'm just going to send a tweet out while we're talking, so I'm not ignoring
you. Yeah, you carry on.
You carry on.
Right. Let me say to you, I was involved in a conversation last night, and I think this is related to the sin bin, in some sort of quirky way. I suggested last night in discussion that for insulting, offensive, abusive language, a yellow card should be issued.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one or two people got to talking and said, what are you on about? Now, whenever a player shows dissent, 90% of the time, he swears at you. Mm-hmm. He's using offensive language. He might even be abusive. So he could be insulting. So because of the interpretation of people's dissent, why do we have to give a red card? Should we give a yellow card? Do we use the stepped approach? There are so many areas that...
Well,
I mean,
yeah, if it's really quite harsh dissent, i.e. the language is being used or you've been personally insulted in some way, then, yeah, stick with the red card. But then this is
interpretation of what is harsh. for people that work on the shop floor in a factory, that's everyday language.
Yeah.
Now, I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. I don't work on the shop floor, mm-hmm. but I have worked on the shop floor. But when I worked on the shop floor, I couldn't use what people would call everyday language. Yeah. I still can't use everyday language in my life. It's not appropriate to me.
Right.
And let me say to you, in social life, in general, when you're out on the high street, when someone is effing and blinding and they're being offensive with their mood, everybody walks wide of them. Nobody wants to go up to them and say, hey, stop it, pack it in, mm-hmm. other than perhaps a policeman or a very brave person on the street. So really, in a way, let's take this onto the football field now. What should we do as referees? We should be dealing with
it in
some format.
It has to be dealt with. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, we can talk about severity. You talked about it being very harsh. That's harsh as regards the words that we used, and he's been very direct, the player. Should a player only be sent off if he swears at the referee?
As opposed to swearing at another player?
Whereby he gets a yellow card. Or does he get 10 minutes in the sin bin? There are so many little bits and pieces you can float with this conversation. Last night, the conversation went on for about half an hour.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, the members, we had a good turnout again at West Somerset RA, and the members sat there and applauded the conversation. And it wasn't my conversation. It was the conversation between at least about 8 out of maybe the 25, 30 people that attended the meeting. They were all quite passionate about their views about the interpretation. And what I put into the conversation was, why do we use the stepped approach, or the quiet word first of all, when a player swears? Hmm. We use the quiet word. And then the second time he does it, we call in the captain. We're using the stepped approach now. And then the third time he does it, he's sent off. I arguably said, why do we allow players free chances, mm-hmm. or... two chances, yeah. before the third time they get sent off. What is it that we decide has got to be the final straw that gets them dismissed? What is it? Should we be more black and white? How do we make our younger referees stronger?
I think that we need to make it more black or white.
Do you?
Personally speaking, yeah.
So let's go back then. Would you use the sin bin for players that show dissent with a little bit of offensive language in there? You're having an effing laugh, referee.
Yeah, good point, actually. I'm made to eat my own words now.
Well, that's the whole thing about debating football. See, this great game.
Exactly. This is why. I've just actually had a tweet as we're talking from Connor Gallagly, I think it is, says, far too confusing, would be difficult for referees on the parks to manage. And I think he's got a very good point there for the reasons that you've just sort of brought up. Kieran Salmon says, no chance, but I think a sin bin should be provided for the foul language that isn't aimed at the referee and also simulation.
Oh, careful. We won't go into the areas of simulation at the moment, but simulation would be a topic, because I think you've got a question about somebody who said they were fouled and they simulated after being fouled. We'll cover that in a while.
Luke Rudman says, this is great, isn't it? This is really interactive stuff.
This is
happening.
This is going strong.
These are tweets are actually coming to us as we're talking now. Luke Rudman says, I agree, it wouldn't work in football. Same as when they try to bring in the move back 10 yards line.
Oh, God, Luke, that's... For me, I like the idea of the 10 yards. Mm. Now, let's use it in the way that rugby uses it. A player who shows dissent, whichever format he uses, is penalised by 10 yards. Mm-hmm. I think, personally, 10 yards.
What, they move the ball 10 yards forward?
Yes.
I think that's a great idea. Now, when I first started refereeing, as you know, at the time, Roger Milford was kind of a mentor for me. And that's what he taught me to do.
Yeah.
He always said to me, if somebody gives you a load of lip, just move the ball 10 yards forward. He said they'll soon shut up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great idea.
Within the laws of the game, we're wrong, aren't we? Mm-hmm. But what have you got to do to keep players playing? Because we want players to play. We want to be able to referee. Without players, we can't referee. You know, so you know, there's a two-way street here. But we have to be assertive. There has to be an element of respect, you know, and working together. So we want players to work with us. We should be looking to work with players. A referee that goes out there and goes out there to catch players out, I think has got the wrong motive or the wrong ideas about what refereeing is. And if I use an example here, many years ago, about 10, 15 years ago, there was a referee that we trained up in the Bridgewater area. And he had this sort of vigilante approach to refereeing. And within his first 3 or 4 months of refereeing, he sent off 26 players.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
That for me is not managing the game of football.
That to me sounds like somebody who's on a power trip.
That's my own
personal view straight away.
Yeah, and like I say, it's 26 dismissals in half of season because he qualified in November, and by the end of March, end of February, marking season, I think it was, he'd sent off 26. Now let's go to the other scale. The player that doesn't send off is the player equally that doesn't gain respect. Mm-hmm. So how do you gain your respect? You've got to find a balance. You've got to understand the emotions that go with football at times and why players do certain things, technical offences, as well as the penal infringements. So, you know, the issue here is we're going back to the sin bin. Why do we want a sin bin? Could we manage a sin bin? And one of our tweets that's come in, I think it was Luke who said, I'm inclined to believe that trying to manage the sin bin at grassroots level could be a nightmare because you could have how many players in the sin bin? Now you send off a player, you remove the player from the field of play for 10 minutes in the 10th minute. In the 12th minute, you have another player doing it and he's in there for 10 minutes. So one player will come on after 20 minutes, another player will come on after 22 minutes, and then you've got another player that does it in the 18th minute. And you have all sorts of nightmares to come on. So the people that are suggesting that we remove the yellow card sanction and introduce the sin bin, I'd like to know how they think it should be applied, because it's all well and good looking after the higher echelons of the game at FIFA, UEFA and the Premiership. Let's talk about that level. But you need manpower. Mm. And
that's the key, manpower.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, through this conversation that we're having, at the very start of it, I actually quite like the idea of the sin bin with some areas, but as this conversation's evolved, now my train of thought is thinking, well, hang on, yeah, you're right. How can a new referee manage a situation like this in their first couple of games?
Absolutely.
And it would just be a disaster for them.
I don't think it's for a new referee that problems would be. I think it's for existing referees that count in the county systems, you know. And, you know, those referees that go out week in, week out, without assistant referees, official assistant referees, but they have club assistants. Yeah, you know, you could go into the areas of, well, some good club assistants would be a real benefit, but that's not always going to be the case. So the idea of the sin bin, I like the idea in some theory, but I don't see the practicalities of it being possible for grassroots referees. And when you think about in the UK, in England, we've got 27,000 qualified referees and approximately, 3,000 of them are level 4 and above. So you've got somewhere around about 24,000 grassroots referees having to deal with that situation outside of, the semi-pro and pro game. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. And if anybody's got any ideas or wants to take the debate further, I'd really like to take this along. And let's see if we can push an idea towards the FA. And if Michel Platini, who you quoted first of all, is looking to introduce this sin bin idea, would it work? beyond the professional game, down towards where we currently work together.
Interesting times. As Richard said, if you'd like to continue the debate, then if you would like to continue the debate, we'd love to hear from you. And you can do that through the website, and that's refereesworld.co.uk. Maybe post something up on Facebook or Twitter. Either way, it'd be good to hear from you. And of course, Rich, you're sorry.
I was going to say, use our refereesworld.co.uk website.
Absolutely.
Put a post on there and let's debate it through that. It won't become a talking... What do you call them? You call them talk shops? Discussion rooms. It won't be one of those, because we'll bring it to the podcast so other people know what's going on.
Excellent. It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. Thanks very much for listening. If you're a new listener, welcome along. A couple of mentions to say hello to for people that have started following us recently. Ollie Williams, hello to you. Joshua S. Holloway, Damien Bell and Jordan Edward Towles, all now following us on Twitter, all now new listeners on the podcast, which you can listen to online through the website, refereesworld.co.uk, and of course online via iPad, iPhone, iThis, iThat. You can download it from iTunes, basically. Just search for Referees World.
From grassroots to the World Cup. This is the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. Now on to a match incident. This is a bit of a juicy one, Rich.
Yeah, very much a juicy one. And I think the referee who's... shared this with us, I think, deserves a pat on the back for literally that reason, because he was I think up a little bit sort of challenged and upset what went on, because it's a rare occasion.
So let's bring him in. This is Dave Jackson, who's a level 5 referee. Hello, Dave, how are you, mate?
I'm fine, Darren, thank you. Fine.
Excellent. Well, Happy New Year, first of all.
And to you.
Let's, no names, please. No club names or anything like that, for obvious reasons. First of all, before we go any further, let's get straight into this match incident. Tell us what happened.
Right, the match incident. Basically, the question I want answered is, what should I have done? What did I do? The match incident was a local Taunton District Saturday League Division 1 game. We'll just say Reds versus Blues, basically. Very one-sided game, no problems whatsoever in the game up to this point in the 60th minute, when the Blues centre half had possession of the ball. All of a sudden, a Reds player launched himself with an absolutely diabolical two-footed horrendous challenge, which immediately, as all referees, when we're out on the pitch, we think, oh, ouch. And as soon as it happened, you know it's red straight away. Instantaneously, a mass brawl or a mass confrontation started up at this point. This is bearing in mind that I'm on my own, so I haven't got my little triangle of two assistant referees to assist me out. So what basically should I have done? Obviously, the red card was, I knew exactly who it was. I had his picture in my mind. I knew his colour. I knew his number. I knew what he looked like. But he instantaneously turned his back and walked 30 yards in the opposite direction with his back to me. So do I show him a red card when he can't even see it? What basically happened is I took two steps back because I wanted to see if anything else was going to happen with this mass confrontation, if anybody else was throwing punches or anybody else was getting over-aggressive. As I'm doing that, the goalkeeper of the injured player runs past me from his goal area and throws a punch on the player who's committed the offence in the first place. So now I've got the scenario. I haven't yet shown the red card to the original offender because he's got his back to me and he's walking away 30 yards away. I've now got the scenario where the goalkeeper obviously deserves or has got to have another red card. I'm still trying to keep an eye on the mass confrontation to see what else is going to happen, if anybody else is going to start throwing punches or start putting their weight around. I got as quickly as I could to where the goalkeeper was throwing the punch, got him away from the situation. He walked back to the injured player on the ground. I then managed to get to the original offender, showed him the red card, went back to where the goalkeeper was with the injured player, showed him the red card, showed a couple of yellow cards as well to other people who were posturing in the area and getting a little bit aggressive. As the original offender is walking to the changing room, he's gone inside the changing room, the goalkeeper starts walking off the field towards the changing room.
Ooh.
The changing area is not a very big area at
right.
this particular ground with doors virtually, well, they are next door to each other.
So that potentially could have kicked off in the changing room as well?
Well, that's my next problem is I've called to the goalkeeper, don't go in that changing room, you've got to stay out here. And he's saying, you've sent me off, I've got to go. And I'm thinking, if you go in that changing room, I don't know what the hell is going to happen in there.
That's brilliant. For me, sorry, Dave, to butt in there. When Rich told me this earlier on, my first response was excellent management. I know technically it's probably not the right thing to do.
That's correct. In law, I've been
absolutely.
Told that I was wrong.
Yeah, in law, yeah. But I think that's brilliant management, Rich. You can only...
I applauded that last night when I sat there and listened to the conversation, and yeah, there were my colleagues sat in the room last night who said, "Well, you shouldn't allow him to stand on the touchline." David applied a real high level of management and proactive thinking as regards that player who'd already been sent off is in the changing room. There's one door and there's two changing rooms behind that one door. David instantly thought proactively, "I don't want a further escalation of this." Because what David hasn't told you is that the goalkeeper is the brother of the victim of the two-footed challenge.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, you know, there's a lot of family blood involved here.
Wow.
So the player has got a motive to defend his brother who's been the victim of this challenge. Now, David got the feeling that there could be a little bit more after this. And I think David said, "I didn't want a death at the game." I think that was your quote, Dave, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and quite rightly, in my opinion, and I'm certainly not trying to change the rules here, but David took the right action to stop a further escalation and asked the player, who the second player was going to be sent off, which is the goalkeeper, to remain in the vicinity of the playing area to avoid further misconduct.
How did the goalkeeper that you sent off afterwards, how did he respond to your request to keep him on the sideline? Or not just the keeper, perhaps fellow teammates or other people around?
The teammates, to be fair, at the time, they didn't say anything. After the game, digressing very slightly, after the game, they said, "I wasn't going to get in his way." So they obviously expected him to lose his temper even further. When he actually went to the touchline, to be fair to his team manager, he kept him under control for the next 20 minutes at least until he calmed down, which I did praise the manager afterwards for helping me out on that.
Well done, Dave. Dave, can I ask a couple of questions just for our listeners so they can understand?
Certainly.
Because this is a very, very rare occasion. How long have you been refereeing?
12 years now.
Okay. How many mass confrontations have you ever had?
That's the first one I've ever witnessed.
That's what I want to highlight. It is a rare situation, but your experience is one of those experiences that we need to share. We shared it at the meeting last night of West Somerset Referees Association, and I think it's only right that we share it again now with our listeners that around the world of this type of situation. What were some of the things that you thought you might have done as opposed to what you did do or didn't do, Dave? At what stage did you produce a red card? Did you think about using the red card earlier?
I must admit I didn't, because my reason being that why I didn't is because the player who I was going to show the red card to was walking in the opposite direction at least 25 yards away from me with his back to me. And my reasoning was, why do I show a red card when he can't even see it?
Well, my point to you there would be, Dave, if you use the whistle to call him back only to show him the red card, perhaps you might have been chucking more petrol on the fire.
Yes, the thing is, as I say, when you're out there on your own, we talk in in RA meetings about having our triangle, but when you're out there on your own, and it's, oh my goodness, what? But Darren, my opinion, from what it's worth, is that nothing was going to stop the goalkeeper, and some of his teammates actually said, "I saw him coming, but I wasn't going to get in his way."
Yeah, and like I say, when you don't have the support of anybody around you, and there are people amongst those 11 on his side that would have supported you, but when they see a ranting, you know, raging bull, don't stand in front of it. You know, and I certainly wouldn't encourage any referee to try and stop him. And I'm glad you didn't do that, Dave, for the sake of, you know, becoming a victim yourself. I mean, yeah. a victim of the circumstance whereby you had to witness it. As a referee is bad enough as it is, let alone get involved and try and stop players from you know, exchanging punches and that. But my reason for making the comment about if you'd called the player back just to show him the red card, I think you wouldn't have helped yourself or the situation, because it could have further escalated and you might have even had extra people coming involved rather than just the goalkeeper who had travelled 60, 70 yards.
My other thought on that is if I'm trying to call him back, then my attention is, then I might miss something else what's going on.
Good point.
In the mass confrontation.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Because my attention would be diverted to try to get this player back to me in order to dismiss him from the field of play.
Dave, when did you first have the red card in your hand?
When I was getting between the goalkeeper and the original offender.
Was this before the goalkeeper punched him or after?
It was simultaneously, really.
Okay.
So you were pretty much right in the thick of it then, Dave?
Oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Did you have to duck?
Situation.
Was it one of those situations?
I was doing the Ollie shuffle.
Okay, Dave. We want people to share the experiences here and how we're going to deal with it. What I know that you phoned up a few people, senior colleagues, to ask their advice about how you got around it and how you dealt with it. Personally, and I'll repeat this because I know the other people that you spoke to, and we confirmed this last night, the way in which you dealt with this, I thought, was perfect. And you couldn't have dealt with it any differently than what you did on the day. Whether or not you might have been in a different position, that's just, you know, a little bit of hearsay and, you know, probably not even relevant to the situation. But the situation of two dismissals, three yellow cards, mass confrontation, all from one challenge, is just horrendous for any referee.
Can I just come in at this point, Dave? Earlier on in the podcast episode, Rich and I were talking about sin bins. Can you imagine how that scenario of Dave's would have been different, okay, possibly far worse even still, if there was two or three players in a sin bin on the side of the on the side of the field? Do you see where I'm going with that,
Rich?
I do
see where you're coming from, yeah.
You wouldn't have heard it, Dave, when we were talking about it, but we were discussing the sin bin and how it would work and all that kind of thing. But again, there's another great example, perhaps, why a sin bin, particularly at the lower level, couldn't really be feasible, because if you've got two or three people in already, and let's say you've got three people in the bin from one team, a player from the opposing team gets sent off, all hell's going to break loose.
He had hell on his hands at the time. But Dave, just summarise the way in which you looked for advice from colleagues, because I want other colleagues to realise that there are people out there that will mentor, they will coach referees through these scenarios. Despite being a referee of 12 years experience, this is your first time of mass confrontation. There could be a referee out there tomorrow that only been refereeing for 10 games even. So what did you do? How did you go about it?
What did I do? Obviously, we're our own self-critics. I think all referees are their own self-critics, and they beat themselves up after games and think, what could I have done better? And I was playing this over and over and over in my mind from the moment I got in the car until 2 days later, and I was just thinking, is there anything I could possibly have done differently to stop that situation? And I came to the conclusion that there wasn't, but I felt that more experienced colleagues who have officiated at a higher level than I ever have done, how would they have dealt with the situation, or would they have dealt with the situation in a different way? And any advice that I could gain, which would help me if I ever, God forbid, encountered that situation again, I was willing to take on board.
I think the point here is, Particularly what Richard's making is, it doesn't matter what level of experience you are as a referee, please don't feel that you can't talk to anybody about it.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you will be faced with, as Richard said, Dave, 12 years refereeing, level 5 referee, that's the first time you've encountered that kind of scenario. And you learn from these situations. And again, phoning somebody to talk about it, Dave, I think you've absolutely nailed it and done the right thing there.
I think that's really important for any referee to realise, no matter how experienced or inexperienced they may be, that there is always someone who you can talk to, not just for advice, but for reassurance.
Yeah. Listen, Dave, just got to say thank you very much for that match incident. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, you're Dave, welcome. All I want to say is give me one piece of advice for any referee listening to this who might have the same situation as you did. What piece of advice would you offer them?
Don't panic. Do what you believe to be right. And at the end of the day, if you've got any problems, phone up any colleague who I'm sure, any colleague, there will be people that you know better than others and feel more comfortable speaking to. But any colleague will be willing to listen to you over the phone or in person. Any colleague at all, I would be very, very surprised if one person said, I'm not interested.
No, they won't do that.
Referee's World.
It's the Referee's World podcast, and thanks very much for listening today. Hopefully you've taken something out of that particular incident that Dave shared with us. And if you have one that you would like to share, then we would love to talk about it, because I think it makes great listening, and you can always learn from these things as well and through others' experiences. You can get in touch with us through the website, refereesworld.co.uk, on Facebook, just search for Referees World Podcast, and on Twitter at Referees World. Now, while that's been going on, Rich, we've still been receiving tweets based on the issue of the sin bin.
Ooh, go on.
Let's have a look. David McLennan says, without meaning huge differences between different levels of football, it's not practical. Okay, straight to the point there.
Yeah.
John Thorburn says, it works well in lacrosse, but only with a bench official to administer the sin bin. Mm. Will also change the dynamic of the game. Good point. Tom Vanderpeer says, I think it's a bad idea. It works how it is. Yeah, good point, I suppose. And Palms says, I believe a green card for lesser offences would be ideal. 3 would get you sent off. OK, moving on. We were going to talk about the Referees Association, but I've just clocked the time, and I think it was probably more important that we heard Dave's views about that really interesting match incident. So what we're going to do, we're going to park the Referees Association stuff until next time. We'll move on with our training topic. So this is where Rich has a pack of cards. I'll choose one at random and we'll discuss it.
Yeah, there you go.
OK, here we go.
There we go. Same cards here. Pick whichever one you want.
I'll have... that one there.
Oh, right, okay.
Is that the right one? Yeah,
well, this is number 4, I think. It's number 4. Yeah, card number 4.
Card number 4 is...
Free kicks near the penalty area.
Okay, free kicks near the penalty area. Here we go, then.
I'm going to refer to attacking free kicks.
Okay, yeah. Attacking free kicks near the penalty area.
Okay, what would you... Let's start this. There's 10 points I want you to think about, Dar.
Bearing in mind I'm a little rusty.
You're a little rusty. You're inactive at the moment, so we'll get you back on the bike, as they say. So let's run through this as regards where were you focus your priority.
Late last night, or you really don't want to know?
Where were you focus your priority?
My priority, where would I focus it? Mm-hmm. In terms of where I would be?
What you're going to do.
What am I going to do?
Yeah. What's the most important thing to recognise straight away?
Well, it wasn't a penalty.
It wasn't a penalty.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is outside.
Yeah.
So it's the focus on the position.
The position.
But focus on the position of the ball, the foul contact.
The kind of challenge that it was.
Okay.
If you like.
Mm.
The heat of the game, because before any free kick taken, you may have a situation like what Dave has been talking about to deal with before you go into a free kick near the penalty area.
Yeah, the mood of the game does have an influence on situations, doesn't it?
Conditions, weather conditions, perhaps?
Yeah, weather conditions will certainly have something to do with it. I mean, the severity of the offence outside the penalty area, there are some referees that take a risk and want to play advantage. Mm. Now, I'm certainly not going to go down the line and discuss advantage and the benefits of that if... And it, there is a big if with advantage. So, but what you have to do with free kicks around the penalty area is take control. Mm. Take control, and that free kick is taken when you say so, mm-hmm. not when they think they should be taking it. So my advice is not to allow a quick free kick. You know,
this is where the big blow of the whistle comes into action, I think. Yeah. It's a good example, good. Particularly for new referees. A big blow on the whistle, let them know that you're in charge and you've got hold of this, because, you know, you're close to the goal, and, you know, if something goes off and you don't see it, or you haven't got control of it, or manner of things could take.
Yeah, use of the whistle, recognition, placement are all part of the ingredients of how we're going to assert control here. So proximity to play. Mm-hmm. Let's give yourself, make sure you're within, let's look for that 15-yard, 20-yard maximum distance from. These are key areas. Anything around the penalty area is a key decision to make. So make sure as referees that we're going to get them right. So identity of the free kick, that's important. Placement of the free kick. Use of the whistle. Impose your presence to make sure that you're there. Don't stop running until you're almost on top of the point of where the infringement was. And assert control by your physical presence. There's the ingredients of stopping play. Mm. Yeah? Now, what happens next? Having stopped play, what are you going to do next?
Well, that's certainly, once you've stopped it, it's going to give you that extra couple of seconds thinking time.
Thinking time.
Which, did you like that phrase, thinking time?
Thinking time, yeah. Well, when do you start thinking about free kicks? When you've blown the whistle, or a couple of days before you were refereeing? Have you got a plan of how you're going to control free kicks? Because this is what we're passing out to our listeners.
Okay. Indirectly, I suppose you have.
Mm.
Because
run a vision through your mind of how you're going to do it, and then do it on the match day.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've talked about placement, proximity, use of the whistle, using your physical presence. What's the next ingredients that you're going to do as regards controlling the attacking free kick near the penalty area?
Well, if you've done your prep on the game, you would probably more than likely want to have known the history between the two teams.
Okay.
So that's going to be a deciding factor, because you don't know that it's going to kick off or not after that particular challenge has been made.
Right. Yeah, if it's a hefty challenge, let's call it a heavy challenge, there may be a caution. Mm-hmm. There could be a dismissal involved. It all depends on the circumstances. So I'm just going to focus on the attacking free kick. You've got to apply a caution. Is the player injured? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's two things to consider. What comes first, the player injury or the caution?
The injury has to be dealt with.
Okay, the injury has to be dealt with. What is the severity of the injury, as opposed to the possible escalation of the type of challenge? If it was a bit of a naughty challenge and he's going to be yellow carded, he's going to be cautioned. So, you know, you've got, do I go towards the player that's injured, or do I...
Depends if it's a head injury or not, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's that type of injury. You know, sometimes you get a feeling as a referee that I need the trainer on as soon as possible. Mm. So as soon as you've seen the free kick, you've blown the whistle, you know you've got to take action against the perpetrator. And instantly, without looking, you wave the physio on. The physio's coming on because that boy needs trainer, the trainer. So focus on the player who was he's the guilty party. Mm-hmm. He's the one that you got to take control of. You might not be cautioning him, but because of people's mood within the game, they might want to try and take the law into their own hands. So create a physical presence and be seen to be controlling that player through conversation, debate, assertiveness. Say, hey, you know, don't like those type of challenges in my game. Do another one. I will caution. Be seen to be taking control rather than let other players take control. So there's phase one, okay? So we've gone beyond that.
Can I pick you up on something you've just said there?
Go on, then.
Do that again, I will caution you. Are you not setting yourself up there? Because if that player does a challenge a bit further on down in the game, I'm going off on a detour here, but if you say, I will caution you next time, mm-hmm. okay, and somebody else has heard, okay, if that person does a lighter kind of challenge, you know, maybe something that was not so much, you know, a cautionable offence, and then you let it go because it wasn't particularly hefty, and then somebody comes back to you and says, you said that you were going to book him.
Yeah, you're going to look for persistent misconduct then as a referee. You've set things up. You've got to use your presence. You've got to use your voice. You've got to use your communication skills to get your message across. When you're taking control of this situation, you've got to impose a level of control which sends out a message to all those others about you. It's not just about the one that you're talking to. If you're trying to impose control, you need all those players around you to realise, hey, this referee's going to do the business if he has to. Now, let me say to you, 2 or 3 minutes later, that player might just create another push, shove, holding, or whatever else. You've set him up. You've set him up for a caution. And, you know, if it was worse than a caution, you've still set him up and he'll be dismissed. So it's that setup procedure here that we've got. We've digressed slightly from free kicks near the penalty area, but you can see where I'm trying to go as regards imposing control. Okay. So let's go to the next phase. Placement of the ball. Mm-hmm. You're happy about the placement of the ball.
Yep.
What's your focus next?
Focus is to make sure that the defending players are the appropriate distance. And basically, I personally would explain to the players that the ball is not to be kicked until I've blown the whistle.
Yep.
Okay. I would then mark the positioning of the defending players, mm-hmm. get them back there 10, 9.1.
You are rusty. 9.15. And let me say to you, that is a minimum.
Yeah.
It's not the maximum. Mm-hmm. It is a minimum, 9.15, 10 yards in old money.
I would then, after I've got them to where I want them to be, I'm just picturing this in my head as I would do it. What I would then do is get myself into the position that I need to be in. Before I blow, just remind the players not to encroach until the ball has been kicked. And then basically, once I'm happy, I will give the I'll blow the whistle and tell them to get on with it.
Would you give any communication to the goalkeeper on my whistle, direct keeper?
I would make it audible so that everybody could hear what I'm saying. You know, and if that meant getting the attention of the keeper on my whistle, everybody on my whistle. Mm, mm.
It's about control of this situation, because let me say to you, even at grassroots level, there are people out there training, football training, once a week, twice a week in some cases, I suppose. There is someone who practices bend it like Beckham. There is a bend it like Beckham in every team. I wanted to be that person. But I was more of a, I'll slam it.
Your legs were too short.
I'll slam it and bash it. You know, that was me. I'll just slam it at the goal and make the keeper make a save. It wasn't successful, but you know what I mean. But it's about having control of free kicks, attacking free kicks around the penalty areas. So, you know, it's about imposing a presence, having close proximity, making the accurate judgment, using the whistle positively, using your presence positively, controlling the players at the restart, controlling the kicker. Don't take the free kick until I indicate that it's okay to use the whistle, especially attacking free kicks, because then everybody knows that you have said it's okay. If you use your voice, there will be someone you didn't signal, referee, because he didn't hear you. Mm. So always use the whistle around those areas. Make sure the wall, defensive wall, is 9.15. Make sure they don't break early. You might have a charger in there. You know, there is always someone designated in a team to charge the ball at free kicks. So, you know, try and identify him. And generally, his posture will indicate that he's going to charge the ball, because he's not standing there covering all the major parts of his body with his arms. He's ready to race and charge at the ball. So look for those telltale signs.
He's ready to take on Usain Bolt.
Absolutely. Look for those telltale signs of when players are going to do certain things. And like I say, control the attacking free kicks around the penalty areas. We briefly covered it, but I think we've covered it quite well.
Rich, it's been a pleasure sitting opposite you once again, and we'll hopefully be back within a month's time.
Yes, as always, Darren, good to be with you.
The download is complete.